This is the Iran Human Rights Podcast, a review of major human rights issues by the International Campaign for Human Rights in Iran. In March of 2011, increased international concern about Iran's human rights crisis led to the appointment of a United Nations Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in the country. Dr. Ahmed Shahid was appointed to monitor and report on the situation. We spoke with him last October, and since then, Iranian authorities have continued to deny him access to the country to conduct his research. But he's still documenting the situation by speaking with hundreds of people living in the country, compiling a comprehensive portrayal of the situation. In today's podcast, we'll speak with Dr. Shahid about his latest report, criticisms of his work by the Iranian government, and his hope for the country's future. Dr. Shahid, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
So this is the third report you've presented since your appointment in March of 2011. Can you give me an overview of the most pressing issues that you've outlined in this recent report?
The top concerns in that, of course, is the high rate of executions that are happening in Iran, and in several hundreds, and nearly all of them happen with very poor due process safeguards, and a large number of them are actually for drug offenses, which don't qualify under international law as a capital crime. I was also very concerned in that report, and still am, about the persecution of journalists and bloggers. A large number of them have left the country already over the past year and a half, and about 40 are in detention. And there are also laws which are restricting, if you like, freedom of expression through the cyber crimes law and internet law as well. I also expressed concern about what I see as persecution of human rights defenders. Over 40 lawyers are in prison. Some of the best known Iranian lawyers actually are in prison. I also expressed concern about the situation of the questions of right to association, right to assembly. A number of the unions are banned. I also expressed concern about women's situation, because discrimination is also quite widespread, whether it is based on gender, religion, or ethnicity. It is a quite serious matter in Iran, and some of these issues have been becoming even more significant, such as the recent increase in persecution of Christian converts from Islam to Christianity, as well as persecution of Baha'is and Sunnis as well. And of course, the worst situation is felt by the ethnic minorities. And in addition to that, I speak about the new laws in place or that are being set up in Iran, the new penal code being the main point I talk about, where things which we initially thought were improvements actually are not. For example, although there is no mention of stoning in the revised penal code, there's still provision for stoning to be implemented through a fatwa. And the number of capital crimes has been increased, and minors can still be executed in Iran even with the revisions to the penal code. So these are the issues that I covered in my last report, and many of them continue to be quite serious concerns moving ahead as well.
All right, so let's dig into a couple of these issues. First, let's talk about execution. Now, Iran has the highest rate of executions, second only to China. Is that right?
Yes, but if you look at per capita numbers, Iran is way ahead.
Wow. So tell me, who is being executed and why?
Drug offenders, actually, drug trafficking. About 80% of those who were sentenced for death last year were those who had been found guilty of drug offenses. Same with this year as well. And therein is one of the biggest problems, because, you know, under international law, although there are 10 countries who still have capital punishment for drug offenses, under international law, drug offenses do not qualify as a more serious crime. The big issue is the fact that many of them are tortured in custody, are forced to make confessions.
You mentioned torture. Now, your report details some very disturbing methods of torture being used in Iranian prisons. Can you elaborate?
Well, yes, these were very disturbing claims, and actually, I mentioned them because they come from a number of sources, independent sources, and some of them actually corroborate each other, or in other words, they stand up to analysis as to their veracity. And the pattern seems to continue. And if you look at the death of Sattar Beheshti recently, there's clear, if you like, example of how custodial treatment can be quite bad for the people concerned. And some of these methods of torture, as I listed in my report, is quite physical, like being suspended from ceilings or being beaten. Others are quite psychological, such as threats to family or threats made to the people. So it's a combination of psychological and physical torture that is emerging from the testimonies I have received.
You mentioned Sattar Beheshti, a blogger in his 30s who was arrested and died in prison this past November after only a few days in captivity. Can you tell me what you know about his case?
He's a young man, a blogger, who had views that were critical of the government, and he was taken in respect of these. And now, of course, a number of things have been said by the government of Iran in their press, and it appears that he was initially taken in by the cyber police, and there are accusations within the country by a parliamentarian that cyber police may have held him illegally, that is to say, beyond the 24-hour period without a warrant or without the proper legal requirements for them to hold him. And it's not clear who may have beaten him, but there have been some reports from the medical examiners that there were signs of him being beaten. And the family also says that there's evidence of him being physically tortured. The report has not come out yet, but I am concerned that there have been some confusing and contradictory statements being made in Iran on this subject, and I have called upon the authorities to make a full inquiry and make the process very, very transparent. That's not the only case of torture that I have received. There have been other cases as well, and there have also been other reports of custodial deaths as well, but they have been difficult to confirm, and therefore they have not gone public with that.
And do you know if any arrests have been made since Beheshti's death?
Yes, there are reports that there have been some arrests made. There are also reports that the authorities are uncertain as to the cause of death. And actually, I'm waiting for an official word from the government on this, because the things that have come out, trickled out into the press, looks very contradictory, such as reports of arrests being made, or reports of courts being attributed to medical examiners saying yes, there were signs of torture, or others say no, there weren't signs of torture, and it's quite confusing at the moment. But what is disturbing is that a young man was taken into custody for something he wrote on a blog, and died shortly thereafter, either while in custody or by the reporter to a doctor just after his custodial time.
Now, last time we spoke, we talked about how your appointment represents a sign of hope for the people of Iran, that the world is paying attention. Do you feel that this is still true?
Yes, there is a lot of enthusiasm amongst the Iranians in the country and in the diaspora to reach out to me, to come and document their case with me, or to report to me of situations they know that happened to their loved ones. So there is, if you like, a real sense of enthusiasm on the part of the Iranians to reach out and document their cases. Many believe that having their case noted in my report is a way of legitimating their grievances.
So you still haven't gotten into the country then?
No, I have written a couple of times to the government of Iran, but I have not received a response to this. The last report I heard in the press again is an interview given by Dr. Larijani.
Now that's Mohammad Javad Larijani, who is the head of the Human Rights Council in the judiciary and a top advisor to the Supreme Leader. Now the government of Iran has attacked your mandate and particularly you as a diplomat, saying that you fabricated facts in order to justify your existence and that you're working under the influence of the West.
Of course, their responses to my reports have been quite, if you like, angry and strong, and typically they attack the men that has been politicized. And they also said things about me in terms of the way I work, which is to say that they accused me of talking to dissidents or to critics of the government. And they of course failed to mention that they haven't spoken to me or engaged with me despite my request to talk to them or to visit the country. At the same time, when they say I am fabricating allegations, they fail to note that many things I am saying have been said or been noted by others reporting on the country. And many of the issues I have raised with Iran were raised during the UPR process in Geneva, as well as in the review by the Human Rights Committee of Iran's human rights record last year. So if you look at what was discussed at the review of the Human Rights Committee last year, and in fact the final observations, you'll find a lot of commonality with what I'm saying as well. So there is no foundation to their charge that I'm fabricating charges, because I am actually talking about real issues. Of course, they say that they're very keen. They keep saying that I have not revealed the names of 200 people who have spoken to me. Now, of course, they're very keen to find out who has been talking to me. But my code of conduct requires me not to expose any people who give information to me to any danger. And in Iran, of course, there is a possibility that if people spoke to me giving out information about their situation, that they could face some sort of sanction. So it would not be prudent for me to share with the government of Iran the list of people who have been talking to me, but they exist, real people, and many of their stories are also to be seen in other sources as well.
This must be a very tough position for you. Tell me about your hopes for the future. Have you seen any improvements in the human rights situation in Iran since your appointment?
Yes, I am. Happy with, if you like, what's been done by the mandate over the past year. Of course, you have not seen anything change on the ground, but the fact that Iranians now feel that they have a voice, that they have a way of articulating their grievances and their concerns, and then have that taken note of by the wider world community, I think the mandate has been a very useful, if you like, platform for them. Now, in terms of government of Iran's reaction to my mandate, I think that's been evolving as well. So there is hope that in the time to come, Iran will realize that I'm not going away, and that in this situation, then they might realize that it's better for them to engage with me than to talk at me.
Dr. Shahid, thank you so much for speaking with me today, and best of luck with your work in the future.
My pleasure, always. Thank you.
That was Dr. Ahmed Shahid, the UN Special Rapporteur on Iran. You can follow his reports and learn more about his methodology on the United Nations website. For more background, check out Monitoring Iran, a report on the achievements by Dr. Shahid, as well as the setbacks he's faced. This report is featured on the campaign's website. That's all for this edition. For more on this story and other human rights news, you can visit our website at iranhumanrights.org. Join us next time for the Human Rights Podcast. Thanks for listening.